this episode of Post Game Shake, we welcome on national champion at Norwich University and professional hockey player for the Norfolk Admirals, Ty Richenbach, and finish up with some breaking news in the NHL, as well as some ridiculous prices for a college basketball game.
We're back with you here, episode 16 of Post Game Shake. We've got Jamie Murray alongside. How are you?
Doing well, Timmy. We unfortunately, to get right into it, had an interview set up for Coach Rice, Coach Jamie Rice of Babson College. But Timmy, if you want to talk about that and what the heck happened on Sunday for
it's still really affecting me, as I can tell. It's affecting me too. It's not like I don't care, but
I'm bitter.
We interviewed him live, went to the rink, had a great conversation. It was organic. It was funny. It was serious. Talked about a lot of stuff, and we stopped the recording, and Muzz goes to play it back, and it's as if the mic's just like we were unplugging it and plugging it back in like every split second. It
sounded like an alien species was trying to contact us. So it was like this mechanical choppy.
There's really no way. It's hard to even explain what happened, but essentially the audio is just unfixable. We even sent it to a couple of our audio engineer friends. They're like, yeah, this is replaceable and just not fixable, and so we obviously cried to ourselves. But
yeah,
that's why the episode is late this week, and we were thankfully Moses able to get on our interview, which is with Ty Richenbach, which I meant to ask him if Norwich said his name correctly. So I'm pretty sure they, like, over the loudspeaker, they said it incorrectly. Everyone calls him Reichenbach.
They must have. I agree with you, because my entire career I thought it was Reichenbach. But you know, he's a good friend of mine, and thank God he was able to come on, because we were kind of in a little bit. We were talking about whether he even put one out this week, because we wanted to have somebody good on, and we had recently talked to Ty about coming on. So, and I shot him a text, and you know, lucky enough, he was all for it. He's down in Orlando right now, and we talk about that for a bit, living the good life. But yeah, it's a great interview. It's like an hour long. It's, you know, the kid's from Billings, Montana, so. Not exactly a hockey hotbed in the United States. So he has a really cool story. So we hope you guys like it.
Very cool story. So without further ado, we are going to kick it to the Ty Richenbach interview.
All right.
Enjoy.
We are here with Billings, Montana native, a national champion at Norwich University, and now a professional hockey player for Timmy's hometown team, the Norfolk Admirals.
What up?
He black aced for Tucson last year of the AHL and spent some time there this year as well. This kid is the definition of made in the USA. Welcome to the podcast, Ty Richenbach.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Hey, we're pumped to have you.
What's going on, man?
Oh, not much. I'm just in the middle of a road trip right now. We were just in South Carolina last night. We're down in here in Orlando. We got a little day off, so it's not too bad.
I know, dude. Who else was on the pod when Timmy Harrison, was that last week we had Timmy on?
Yeah, and he's in South Carolina.
In South Carolina. We're like living vicariously through you guys in warm places.
Yeah. Well, I played him like the next night after he was on with you guys, and we talked in warm-ups for a little bit.
Did you really? At that point, yeah. We hadn't even talked to you about – well, we had talked to you about coming on, but we hadn't talked to you about coming on this week. We had some extenuating circumstances, but that's funny we got you guys back-to-back.
We always have some pretty good battles when we play. He's a pretty tough net.
He's a big body in front of the net, too.
He's always in my crease more than I am usually. So,
yeah, he's in your grill.
Yeah.
We were talking, and I said, "Hey, I heard you last night." And he goes, "What do you mean?" It's post game. He's like, "Oh yeah."
Words getting around. I love it.
Love that. Yeah, for sure. Would you say the weather is like in Orlando right now?
I think it was just the high of 85 right now.
That's all it is. It's starting to snow right now outside my window. So I mean, 85, yeah. 30, and snowy. I guess we'll take the 85. Not too shabby.
Yeah, I haven't seen snow at all this year, so I can't complain.
Yeah, you're probably not going to see much if you're living in Norfolk, honestly. So
yeah, we had a snow. We had a couple snowstorms last year.
Yeah, did you say that like the entire just like city shut down, which is surprised me at all.
Yeah, 2 inches and it shut down all of Hampton Road.
Yeah, it's such a joke.
The people across the street from us, I don't know if you remember, Ty, where the guy had his pickup truck out and he was pulling his kids. Like, they had the the inflatable.
Yeah, yeah,
it was so cool. I was like, wow, I kind of wish we were doing that right now.
But they were like the water inner tubes that they were pulling them on.
The inflatable ones. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, but those are like, those are the best snow, whatever you want to call them, tubes or sleds that you can get because you just fly on those things.
Yeah, for sure.
But anyways, lucky you, warm weather. You guys go to, not to get way off topic, but you guys go to Disney?
Didn't. We actually got in last night about 6 a.m., so I took the option on the day and slept till about 1.
Smart man. Business trip.
There was a few guys, they went to Universal, but I've done it before last year when we came down here. So.
Yeah, there you go.
I know you were a pretty big advocate.
Dude, every time I was like,
why is it not surprising that Moses was like the first one in the group chat be like, hey, I don't want to go to Universal today?
No, I was every time.
Well, it was like a week before we even go to Orlando. He's already planning it out. So.
I love that.
I'm just trying to use hockey as a vehicle to like experience cool things, you know?
Hey, man, you get to see a lot of stuff. Might as well.
I would use it in Florida and go to as many mini golf places as possible because Florida is like the king of having just like awesome mini golf places.
Probably more like Fort Myers, but I think we only got 1 or 2 days down there last year.
Not really.
Yeah.
I even think there's a couple guys today. I think there's 3 guys. They went and actually golfed 9 holes down here.
That sounds unbelievable.
That's another good idea too. Yeah, yeah. Way better than mini golf.
Yeah, right. Real golf.
Yeah. Yeah, seriously. Yeah.
All right, let's get right into this.
Yeah. So Ty, you grew up in Montana. You know that. Our listeners probably don't. So tell us about what it was like kind of growing up in Montana. How do you get into hockey? And then, you know, what's life like out there? That kind of stuff. However you want to take it.
Man, hockey is not as big as some people actually think it would be. You know, everybody thinks like Minnesota, North Dakota, like some cold northern states, you know, hockey's a big thing, but really wasn't. My older brother, he's 5 years older than me, he played. I don't know how he got into it, but my dad ended up being the coach, and I just obviously wanted to be like my brother, and I had all that hand-me-down goalie equipment sitting at the house, so it was kind of inevitable that I'd play net. But yeah, the closest game we'd play would be a 2-hour drive. That was in Bozeman, Montana.
Like your home rink was 2 hours away?
No, that was like the closest team we could play.
Yeah, yeah, I gotcha.
Was 2 hours away. Jeez. So, I mean, you'd go and you'd try to fit 4 or 5 games in a weekend, wherever you'd go. I mean, you'd be traveling some places, you know, 5-6 hours. And for minor hockey, like youth hockey like that, it was that was a pretty big sacrifice, you know, your parents have to make to do something like that. So, I give them a lot of credit for putting up with me and my brother, you know, doing it 2 times, basically.
Yeah, I mean, dude, like, how do you have enough players for a team even? Like, I know when I was writing this down, the first thing I was like, all right, how do you play hockey there? And I was like, well, it's a cold area. It's not like, you know, Timmy's kind of from Virginia, and we had guys on our team who are from Florida where, like, you know, it's not really a hockey climate. But Montana's kind of a hockey climate, but wide open, right? Like, mountains and – I still want to get out there.
My dad actually, he didn't do it when my brother was playing, but when I was playing, I don't know, I was probably 12, 13 years old. He started, we had a big pole barn out in, on our property. We live kind of outside of the city. We had a big pole barn out there, and he would move all of his construction equipment out of it, and he would freeze it. He'd open up both garage doors and he'd freeze it. So we'd have our own ice sheet in my backyard. So I'd have, that was like the selling point to get like my friends to come out of the city and come out to where I'm at, come out there and hang out with me because I had some ice, and we ended up stealing a net from the town rink. It was an old net behind that nobody ever used. So we put that out there, and I mean, there was times you get like 5 or 6 guys out there playing some shinny hockey. It was pretty cool.
That sounds awesome. Do you guys have like a roof on there too?
Oh, yeah, it was totally enclosed, but it had 2 great big garage doors. So he would open that up, and then at night when it would kind of calm down and it would get the coldest, you know, he'd go out there and he'd flood it. He had all these little tools to, you know, scrape it and everything. He had quite the system.
Damn.
And it was like his office was connected to it out there. So that was like the locker room, and there was heaters in there. You get dressed. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, his quote-unquote office where his mini fridge was. Yeah,
I love that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, full-size fridge. That was his office out there. Yeah.
Love that. That sounds awesome.
Dude, we've never talked about that.
I don't know why. I literally just remember that. I mean, that was one of the coolest things probably when I was young, because I would get – well, my dad, when he was the coach of, you know, all my youth hockey teams, we would do, like, workouts, like, twice a week. Like, the whole team would come out, and we had, like – we'd do a footwork station that was shooting pucks, push-ups, and just, you know, that was kind of right when you start thinking, okay, hockey players, you got to start working out and getting tough, right? And he just kind of put us through some circuit workouts. But, yeah, that ice rink was pretty sweet. We only did it for, like, 3 or 4 years, but it was definitely a highlight of my childhood for sure.
That's unbelievable, dude. I don't know if Timmy, I think I've told you this story before, but my dream was like rink in the backyard. That's all I ever wanted, was like, let's get a rink in the backyard. So me and my dad, I say me and my dad did it. I was like 12, but
I was, you watched him. Like, come on, dad,
I watched. I was like, yeah, you want me to like hold this and whatever. But yeah. So he put together this like pretty good size. I'm trying to think of what realistically the dimensions were, maybe like 20 by 60. Like exactly what I needed for that age. He built it. We got a little bit of a slant in our backyard. So it had to be, I forget what the word would be, but I think it was like 3 feet tall on the right side. And then we had like 1 foot on the other side, and you have to fill it with water. Obviously to get it to be 60 feet long, you needed that much of a difference. Dude, mm-hmm. I went to school, like we checking the weather. It was like 20 degrees. So I'm like, all right, by the time I get home, this thing's going to be frozen. And I get dropped off on the bus right down the street, and I'm walking home, and I'm looking in the backyard, just like so excited to skate on this rink. And I look, and I'm like, what is going on? And I see the rink is like torn in half, and it's in my neighbor's yard. Like, not even kidding, 100 feet. So as 100 feet away from where it started. So like as my yard goes, it like gets gradually steeper. And as the water froze, it got heavier and pulled the rink down the hill. And that was the closest thing I ever got to a rink in my backyard.
Dude, no way.
Yeah. I wish I had pictures, because it like you would never understand. I still don't understand the physics. I'm 100 feet away from where it started. It was
That's incredible.
It was crazy and heartbreaking. Probably one of the top 10 worst moments of my life.
Did you cry?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, dude. I was like,
you got all of his head
balling. I was in tears. This is my life dream. All gone.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Montana – I mean, big barn playing shinny hockey. That sounds incredible. But I'm assuming you did a bunch of other outdoor stuff. I'm just assuming big plot of land, like you kind of mentioned. Talk about some of the other things that you kind of did to spend your time out there in Montana.
Well, my dad actually took up most of my time. I started working for his construction company when I was 11 years old. I don't think I'm allowed to really say that for like tax purposes.
We're gonna report you.
Child labor laws. Yeah,
but yeah, he that was just something, you know, he instilled in me and my brother at a very young age. You know, we don't just live and feed off him for free. You know, we got to kind of pave our own way. So I mean, we'd go to school, and after school he'd pick us up and we'd go and we'd work for him for a couple hours until he was done. But you know, when I was younger, we had horses. You know, I think we grew up on about 15 acres. So we had horses, and we kind of rent that land out now. So, I mean, horses aren't really hard to take care of, but they're my mom's real passion, so she rode them all the time. Yeah, I mean, it's tough. You know, you want to go hang out with your buddies, but, hey, it's a half hour into the city, and then they drop you off, and they got to go pick you up. So, I mean, it wasn't like a big thing where, you know, you could just walk across the street or down the road to your buddy's place. So, I mean, you kind of had to really take advantage of recess at school, I guess.
Yeah, definitely.
But, no, it definitely brought me and my brother closer. I mean, we did everything together when we'd both be home. So, whether it was helping dad out or, you know, hockey, you guys obviously know it consumes a lot of your life. So, it takes up most of the nights. Especially traveling into the city and going practicing, and then my brother would practice, and I'd have to wait at the rink while he was there, and then after that you get home pretty late, and it's off to bed, and you know, that same old grind. On the weekends you're gone, you know, traveling all over Montana. We go to North Dakota a lot, South Dakota, down to Colorado, some tournaments in Wyoming. Bet you know there's hockey.
Yeah, right.
I was gonna say not probably not much.
Yeah.
Right?
So, yeah, but no, I mean youth hockey. It wasn't. You know, obviously we thought we were all gonna be in the NHL, just like any youth player thinks. You know, and we played all year round. We played in the summer. We had a team called the Montana Thunderblades. It was a team, an all-star team of Montana, you know, from, you know, it was 17 of us from the whole entire state, and we'd go up to Canada and we'd just get our asses kicked. Go down to, like, big tournaments and play, like, Little Caesars, and we're playing, like, we're in Alberta. I mean, we went to Whistler, British Columbia. Like, we would travel kind of, like, all over, and it was a great experience, but basically the coach's mindset after was like, hey, you know, after we just lost, you know, 15-0, we had two shots on that maybe. They'd be like, hey, these guys are your age, so these guys want to go to the NHL too. So, I mean, that's
definitely
that's a competition. So it
was
eye-opening.
A little reality check, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, of course you got some guys like, okay, well, you know, the parents see that. All right, my kid's not going to the NHL. I'm done paying for all of the equipment. We're done this. And that's kind of the – What we're running into now. You know, I'm watching my nephew kind of grow up and go through, and I mean, it's tough to make teams, man. I mean, he's, you know, you see some goalies are playing two age groups above what they should be at just because there's no goalie. You know, like, you know, they don't have enough players to make teams, which is it's tough. But I mean, ever since Vegas came about, you know, it really they went and did a camp up in Montana too. So I mean, it's. I think
nice. Yeah, that's huge because Vegas is not that far from you guys, right? Is it? Relatively not, but it's probably.
No. I mean, Denver is probably like the closest like hockey spot. That's close. That's about like an 8-hour drive.
Okay. Jeez. Yeah, not close.
The town I grew up in. But yeah, Vegas. I mean, I went to some like showcase tournaments when I was, you know, like a freshman in high school, down in Vegas. I don't know what they call it, but those tournaments. It's like a big, they just put you on a team and it's a showcase, and apparently a million scouts are going to be there to watch you, and you see about three or four guys up
the
there.
The classic one. So talk more about, you said, you know, kind of following your brother's footsteps. He's 5 years older than you. Talk about like how far he ended up going and, you know, what his kind of relationship means to you just all the way through youth hockey and then, you know, kind of beyond that.
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously my brother, he, you know, if he wasn't there, I highly doubt I'd ever would have played hockey in the first place. You know, like, you know, my dad's got a story. He comes home, we had an unfinished basement for a number of years when we were growing up. So it's, you know, all you know, concrete foundation walls, and, you know, you're not going to break anything. So we had a net down there, and we had a bunch of pucks, and, you know, Bo would be ripping pucks all day. And, you know, dad comes home from work one day and we're down there playing whatever. And he strolls down around the steps and he looks and he said, all he can see is me sitting there. I got two pillows strapped with belts around my legs. And I got like a shopping bag around my neck with a pillow in it. I'm wearing like a baseball catcher's mask, catcher's glove. And I don't even have a blocker, and I'm holding a stick. I'm standing in net. I'm like 4 years old, 5 years old.
My no brother way.
Is just teeing up real pucks, just full clappers, and I'm standing there. And he said when he walked around, he said the only thing he could see
was, oh my God,
all my toes. Like, I wasn't even wearing shoes. I was barefoot, just sitting there. I mean, you know, your older brother, when you're that age, he could tell you to jump off a cliff.
Absolutely,
and it'd be cool, and you would do it in a heartbeat, right? So. I'm down there. I'm wide-eyed, a big smile on my face. I think I'm the coolest thing ever. And my dad obviously put the end of that. But yeah, I mean, he grew up. He was a goalie too. So you know, you're doing, you know, districts, and you're trying to make the U.S. national team, right? So it wasn't very hard. But you know, me and him were always the number one goalie in the state of Montana. So you know, four other kids. So I was like, you know, it was cool, but then I was like, okay, like, there's a lot bigger world out there than what we're living in. And, he really only played through high school. He was, you know, we idolized, you know, Patrick Waugh, you know, back in that day. So, you know, I always looked at him
absolutely
like the next Patrick Waugh, right? So yeah, I mean, he was a stud in high school, and then, you know, he just kind of took his path. You know, his path was military. You know, he wanted to go to military. He got a wife, a son, and next thing you know, he became a Navy SEAL, and now he kind of lives vicariously through my hockey career. You know, and any decision I'm making or whatever, he said, "Hey man, you know, just play as long as you can. You know, it's, you know, one day you'll look back and you don't want any what ifs." So he's definitely a big motivator in my career anyways. I mean, I got to give him all the credit. You know, he started me in it, and I guess I was either good
a little bit of both, man.
To
yeah.
Stand in that for this
anything time, you take from yeah. him being a Navy SEAL, like, so, I know we talk about it a little bit, and like, obviously we all have a ton of respect for what those guys do, but you especially seen it firsthand, but like the kind of mindset and stuff that those guys have.
Yeah, I mean, you can go on YouTube and you can watch, you know, what Hell Week looks like and the training and stuff they have to do. And everybody's like, "Oh, that's crazy. It's insane. Why would somebody ever do that? Like, these guys are mental." But, you know, like, they're sitting there saying, "Hey, man, everything we're doing, like, it's all a mindset. It's all in your head. You know, you think you're tired, but your body
right.
can actually go for another 5 minutes, you know, and it's just you have that voice in the back of your head trying to save your body." But I mean, so they kind of learn how to push the limits, you know. And I'm sitting there thinking, you know, I every once in a while I'll compare it to my life, like, "Oh, you know, we got in at 3 a.m. and we have a pregame skate, and, you know, we can all complain and do all that, but at the end of the day, you know, how hard."
Yeah, putting things in perspective for sure.
So I can kind of. Yeah, I can always, you know, when shit's hitting the fan and you want to sit there and complain all day, you can always sit there and, you know, put it back into perspective for you and say, "Hey, life's..."
Did you ever have a dream of following his footsteps in that regard too, and having a military background, or was it never really a thought in your head?
Oh, yeah. And no, 100%. I mean, after my senior year at Norwich, when we won the national championship, I was pretty set on joining the military and then going special forces, you know, following his footsteps right then and there, until, you know, I kind of was presented with the opportunity that professional hockey would be feasible. So, I mean, that was definitely like, "Oh man, what do I do
is
now?"
Is that still something that you want to, you know, accomplish or pursue when the day comes where you're not playing anymore?
I think it has changed for me a little bit. I mean, now, you know, playing for 2 years, you know, it's quite the grind on your body. It puts a lot into perspective for you. I mean, you know, I feel like every year you play,
that's I feel that, yeah.
Off your life. I mean, I got up this morning at one after that bus ride playing a game, and I felt like I was a 60-year-old man. You know, and I'm only 25, so it shouldn't be feeling like that. But no, I'm not sure. I'm not as set on it as I was a few years back. I might be thinking I might go in the route of law enforcement. You know, with my degree, that's what I got in college. You know, criminal justice. So I think once I'm done playing, that might be where I.
There you go.
Let's backtrack a little bit. Attention. Go. Kind of start from, well, not start, but pick up where we were, maybe more like the junior hockey prep. So you did Notre Dame. That was in the SJ, yeah. Right?
Yeah. So I actually, while I went to the prep school up there, like the high school, I actually, one of those three scouts that I was talking about down in Vegas actually came and talked to me. And he was the coach of the AAA team up in Notre Dame for like the high school. So, you know, we made a family decision. You know, at the time I was still playing baseball, and I didn't know if hockey was everything to me. And obviously, if you're gonna make a decision like that, it's it's not cheap. So they said, hey, if you're going to do this, you're gonna do it for 2 years. You're going to graduate up there. And I did. And I think that was the best decision I ever made when it comes to, you know, hockey or playing career. Not hate to leave Montana.
I mean, we're talking about, like, Wyoming being, you know, not many people, Montana. But I looked up where Notre Dame is. It's in Wilcox, Saskatchewan. It says the population is 322. Just tell me about, like, Wilcox, Saskatchewan. I want to hear, like, the classic description.
Yeah. So Wilcox is a pretty unique place. When my parents actually took me up there for the first time, I went on a visit. Right, I was already committed to go there for my grade 11 year of high school, and they say, okay, we'll come up here. It was an 8-hour drive away from our house, north, you know, across the border, and so we get there and we're going in for this tour and show us around, and we're lost. We're in Saskatchewan. I mean, there's just literally like grid roads. Me and my dad, you don't have data on your phone, so you can't use your phone. Like, we had no idea where we were. And we're saying, it's like literally right here. We drove by the school three times because we couldn't even see that there was a school there. Like, we were literally on a highway in the middle of like wheat fields, and like, it just looked like a farmer's plot of land where, you know, like, yeah, how he'd have trees like around his place. That's literally what the school was. And we drove by it three times, missed it completely. And, you know, you turn down Main Street, you roll in, there's, you know, 5-6 streets there. And, you know, it says 300 people live there. About half those people actually work at the university. They call it, it's a college, and it's Notre Dame College. So, most of them work there, and after you go there for a year, man, you know everybody in that town very well. It's cool. It's set up like a college. You know, you have your dorms. There's, you know, a girls' dorm and a guys' dorm, and cafeteria. You walk to your different classes. So, I mean, it made the transition to university like really easy. Cause it was, you know, I'd already been dealing with that when I was
nice. So, what was it like playing in that league?
The high school.
Well, both. I mean, I'm more interested in like the SJ, but yeah, give us that lowdown.
Yeah, so it was cool. I mean, because I sat there, I actually watched. You know, there's nothing to do in Wilcox, Saskatchewan, right, but go to the rink and watch whatever team's playing. So for the 2 years I went to prep school there, we watched the junior team play. So you're seeing Flin Flon, LaRons, you're seeing like the Bruins, you're seeing all these teams come in to play. You're like, man, junior hockey would be pretty sweet. So now, you know, my mind's thinking, hey, you know, that's kind of what I want to do. And, you know, after my senior year, after the year was over, the head coach of the junior team approached me and he signed me for camp and to come back the next year. And it was cool. It was a cool experience, man. I that's some tough hockey out there. You get some Saskatchewan natives out there, some big country boys. The big hits, some big fights. I mean, it's definitely one of the tougher leagues if I had to.
So, I mean, all those bus trips through, you know, grid highways and going up to these random towns and in Saskatchewan. So I want to ask kind of a little more less happy topic, but the Humboldt Broncos strategy, I mean, it affected everybody that played hockey to a level of you're taking bus trips here and there. And just you can imagine it being like your team, but I want to know, like, how that tragedy affected you, just knowing you played in Humboldt for a couple of games. I'm assuming you did those same bus trips. I mean, I just want to know kind of how that hit you and you know, what your thoughts were from that.
Yeah, man. Well, when I found out, I was pretty – it hit me pretty hard because I actually knew a guy that was there. I'd worked some camps. Every summer I go there and I work camps at Notre Dame. And there was a guy, Caleb. He was actually on the bus. Ugh. You know, he was on the team. He was the captain of the team. And so I had known him just from working a couple camps with him. You know, he's a beauty. You know, we hung out. We got along really well. And never really kept in touch much other than coming to work those camps. But then when I found that out, boom, I looked up the roster as quick as I could, knew he was there. And, you know, got a hold of some people close to him, and he was okay, which is good. I mean, he's doing good now. He's playing college hockey up in Canada now, so he's doing good. But I mean, for me, yeah, I mean it hits close to home. I mean, we played Humboldt, you know, 5-6 times a year. I played in that league for 2 years. I had planned on asking for a trade to Humboldt if I was going to be there for my 20-year-old year junior. You know, that was the place to be. That was they were the team. And, you know, if you wanted to win a championship, you know, I was like, okay, I think I might want to get on that team somehow. So I was already planning on asking for a trade there. So, I mean, it was it hits you pretty close to home. I mean, you don't really think about all the bus trips and the hours you log on these buses. And, you know, you never know.
Yeah, obviously that was awful. But I remember you talking about it. And, like, you know, we were all affected in a way, not in anywhere near close to how those kids were affected by it and people in the town and that stuff. But, you know, you definitely obviously have ties to it. It makes things different. So, yeah, just shitty.
Yeah, man, I remember for weeks after that, everywhere we'd go, my mom and dad, they would stay up through the night, and they'd be like, text
right.
me, where are you at? Where are you at? Are you good? And I mean, the thing about that, I mean, all the parents that weren't even involved with that see that, you know, and their kids are out there traveling.
Dude, we were getting ready to leave. We were going down to Reading, right, for our last game of the year, I think it was. And we were literally, like, we got off the ice, and we found out, and we're eating dinner, and we're getting onto a bus. And obviously, like, you're not making it about yourself, but at the same time, that all of a sudden that doubt, like, dude, I was sitting in my little coffin-like bunk, and I'm like, all of a sudden, I've always just had you, like, kind of just trust the process, like, whatever. Now I'm like, holy smokes, could you imagine what it would be like if this bus just got hit by an 18-wheeler? And I had that doubt the entire time. I couldn't sleep. I was tossing and turning, like.
Man, so
really?
This year we got into a bus crash. Yes. We were in Cincinnati. We're going to play Cincinnati, and we're driving. We're 10 minutes away from the rink. We're on a highway. A mattress is in the middle of the road.
Yeah.
We're on, like, the double-decker sleeper bus, right? We're all, you know, there's guys sitting up playing cards. There's guys laying down. You know, everybody's kind of doing their own thing. Next thing you know, you hear – you just – feel us jam on the brakes. We're on the highway going 65, 70, I don't know, whatever it is. Next thing you know, just boom.
No way.
Boom. I mean, we rear-ended two cars. There's a mattress right in the middle of a four-lane highway, and this car just stops, like, on a dime. And our bus had nowhere to go but right through the back end of it. You know, luckily, you know, the two cars we hit, they didn't have any injuries. You know, nobody on our bus got hurt. But, man, that was like – I was scared to call my mom to say, because I already know she was worried about it, to actually tell her, hey, we just got in an accident on the bus. So, yeah, I mean, you are. You sit in the bunk. You don't realize how many times you do it. And you get on there. You pull up your iPad.
It's like you're in a different world, you know. You don't – it's like that you're going 65 miles on a highway.
Yeah.
65 miles an hour, not buckled in. And the amount of, you know, bus rides with all these teams, it's just a matter of time before something like that happens.
Yeah, so it definitely makes you think. And,
That's
honestly,
true.
I mean, it's just so many bus rides, so many bus trips, a lot of people doing it. Just gets crazy. It doesn't happen more often, and thankfully it doesn't, right? So, all right, on a lighter, happier note, let's move right into your college experience. And you went to AIC before transferring to Norwich. So, you know, what was your college recruiting process like? Why AIC? Were there any other schools that, you know, that you needed to make a decision into where you would go before you chose AIC?
Yeah, so I was playing when I started playing junior up at Notre Dame. I mean, they obviously have a really good reputation. So, highly touted, a lot of people go to recruit players from there. And I was talking to, you know, a lot of D1 teams, you know, and Norwich had actually reached out to me right away, my 18-year-old year. And I was like, yeah, no, like, I was still on the point where, you know, D1's my life. Like, I'm not settling for anything less. And, you know, so I just kind of said thanks, but no thanks. And I was actually talking to, you know, Colorado College, you know, UMass Lowell, Michigan, you know, so I was talking to some big schools, but they wanted me, you know, for me to work out, I needed to play my 20-year-old year at Notre Dame. And, you know, I just finished my second year, my 19-year-old year, and I was talking with Union. And I was literally, like, in the process of committing with Union. I was going to Union, so, I all these other schools are like, hey, you sure you can't wait? And I said, no, I'm ready. I got really excited. I jumped on the boat as quick as I could, I guess you could say. And next thing you know, that whole thing with Union falls through. So I'm like, oh, you know, like, what am I going to do now? And it was late. Like, I was planning on going up to Notre Dame for my 20-year-old year. And AIC calls me. I mean, it was late in the summer. And they said, hey, we need a goalie. We've been looking at you. We want you. Here's, you know, come out. We want to fly out on a visit. So I fly out. Summertime, nobody's there. I get to see, you know, I get to see most everything. And next thing you know it, I fly back. And, you know, they offer me a scholarship that I really couldn't refuse. You know, I'm sitting there looking at my parents. They had just paid for me to go to prep school for 2 years, you know, out of country tuition in Canada. I mean, you know, it was a pretty good chunk of money. So I'm like, all right, I got to help my parents out. You know, AIC is offering me to go play there for next to nothing. I was like, V1, this was my dream. I got the opportunity to do it. So, you know, I signed on the dotted line right away. And, it was a 2-week turnaround, and boom, I packed my bags and I was a freshman at university. You know,
that's crazy, dude. Crazy.
3 weeks. And yeah, so, you know, I'm showing up there and, you know, I do meet all the guys. And at the time, AIC wasn't like a historic, you know, Division I program. Actually, right now, I think they're like top in the Atlantic. I mean, they've really, really turned it around since I left. Go figure. But no, it's good to see that they're doing good. But I mean, I was there pretty much by Christmas time. I kind of decided that really wasn't a place I wanted to spend, you know, my 4 years. And you know, I made the decision, you know, with my family and everything. I said, hey, I don't know what could happen after this, because, you know, you weren't allowed to go shop around, see if a team would get you, and then go tell your coach, right? So I had to go in, and it was one of the harder things I ever had to do, because I don't like quitting stuff, but I had to go in, and I had to talk to the head coach, and I had to tell him that I'm quitting. You know, it really took him by surprise. You know, he thought I was happy there, and you know, we don't need to go into too much detail about it, but, you know, next thing you know it, I was done, and it was time for me to start shopping around and making calls. So I called a lot of the teams that were recruiting me prior, but it just wasn't going to work out, because I would have to redshirt, and, you know, scholarship while you redshirt, and it just – none of it was really ideal. And I knew if you transferred from D1 to D3, you didn't have to register. You could play right away. So, you know, I looked up, you know, top 5 Division III schools in the country, and I sent all their coaches an email. And, you know, literally, I remember I was in the library sending these emails, and my phone starts ringing from Norwich. You know, it's Steve Mattson, the assistant coach, the recruiter guy. Literally, as I
sent the email,
he had called me within 5 minutes. You know, and I mean, technology, yeah, he probably got the email on his phone. But, you know, I was like, wow. I mean, that's, to me, I kind of took it as a sign. You know, I mean, they were there from day one, from when I was 18, 19. You know, now I'm 20.
This is time you're asking for money, though.
So, yeah, I took it as a sign. And I said, hey, I mean, I don't have to redshirt. Financially, you know, I did really good in school, so me and my family made the decision to pull the trigger.
Dude, I mean, that sounds awesome. We have all the respect in the world for Norwich hockey program, all that stuff. I mean, it's just a matter of, yeah, like, did you get, not that we need to get too into it, but did you get a lot of money for like academics or anything, or how did that work?
Oh yeah, like they're like the presidential scholarships over 50% of your tuition.
Yeah.
So and I qualified for that. So it's like, man, that's unreal. So yeah, I mean, it was financially we were able to do it, and it was you know, with getting my freshman year, you know, for free, it was, you know, you
that's
just
awesome.
Kinda, you do
so
the math,
I mean, let's get kind of right into the hockey. I mean, we're gonna get into your senior kind of magical national championship run, but you had a really good sophomore year when you came to Norwich, and then kind of a dip junior year, and then a really good senior year again. Is there any reason in your mind why there was such a weird dip in your individual performance? I know that was kind of a down year, I guess, historically for Norwich hockey. I mean, all, you know, kind of comparatively speaking, but do you have any individual reasons, or was it just kind of the way the year went?
I mean, there wasn't anything like personally going on in my life. I sit there and I look back on it, and I think we had such a good sophomore year. I mean, we were number one in the country for so long, and we were kind of not expected to win it, but I would say we were up there to be one of the favorites, you know, or when you toss around, you know, top four or five teams, you know, we were definitely in the mix. And when we lost that game in the quarterfinals to go to the
against Amherst, you know, right?
The Frozen Four there, against Amherst, you know, we were upset that we even had to go to Amherst. We were surprised that they didn't have to come to our rink and play us, based on the records. But you know,
no one,
not us, honestly.
Especially at the Division III level, it makes no sense, because yeah. We've heard it from Dave Cunningham's perspective, who was the goalie for Amherst, who was hurt at the time, so he wasn't even playing against you guys. And then we heard it from Kevin Rooney's perspective about how even Division I, they were the fourth seed out of the four teams in their regional, and they were put into the Providence regional as a team from Providence. So they basically got a home game against the number one seed, Miami of Ohio, which makes no sense at all. Like, if there's any fairness, that shouldn't happen. But NCAA makes no sense.
Yeah. I mean, that was like us. I don't even remember our record from that year, but I mean, we didn't lose very many games. And I mean, Amherst had lost, I don't know, it was like, I don't even remember how many, but like their record wasn't as good as ours. And we were like, how are we traveling there? And we went there and, you know, we lost in overtime, you know, fluke goal. And it was just like, how did our season just end like that? But I mean, for all 3 years, I mean, me and Ostepchuk, we basically went game for game, you know, and I don't think there's really many programs that have done that, especially, I mean, we did that for 3 years straight, going game for game, you know, until playoffs came around, and then he picked his guy. I don't know if, you know, that constant head-to-head battle maybe got to me for a little bit my junior year after having such a good sophomore year. You know, whether I felt a little comfortable or not, not exactly sure. But I know definitely my senior year, thinking that might be the last year I play hockey, that I was definitely all in, and I wasn't going to have an average
year.
Definitely. Like, my senior year was, for sure.
So in senior year, I mean, pretty ridiculous run you guys went on. I mean, we obviously played you guys twice, just being in the same conference, and I mean – It was crazy because you had such a big senior class, the same class that I was in, that you were in. I mean, it was you. I'm assuming you guys had a good influx of freshman talent come in the from your junior year to your senior year, but it was mostly the same team, and you guys just literally just flipped the switch, and you were pretty much unbeatable in your senior year. Just kind of, I mean, talk about that a little bit, and then I obviously want to get into, you know, the final Frozen Four national championship game, those kind of things, but just talk about the run first.
Yeah. I would say, I mean, yeah, like our senior year, there was 11 of us that were there sophomore year. You know what I mean? That's 11 guys on a college hockey team. That's the majority of your team. And, you know, that was a healthy mix of, you know, our, you know, first two lines, you know, your 4D and then your two goalies. I mean, we were all there from – so we had that taste of how close we were our sophomore year and not having the greatest year our junior year. So, I mean, it was captain skates from day one. You know, this is – we're flipping the switch, like you just said. And it's crazy to look back on that year. And I don't know, our record was 27-1-3, I think. We lost one game. You know what I mean? You know, three ties, but we went into every game knowing we were going to win, you know, and I've never felt like that before in my career or, you know, even after. You know, you have your confidence in yourself and you have, you know, your mental game and everything. But that was the only time in my life where I was with a group of guys where we were going to go out there and we knew.
Yeah.
We were going to win that game. You know, it didn't matter who we were playing, you know, our rivalries with Babson or UMass or, you know, it didn't matter who we were playing. We knew that we were going to win that game. And, you know, there was obviously, yeah, there was, you know, a time we didn't. And then there was three times we tied. And it was crazy to sound, but those four games were devastating to us, you know, and then the whole grand scheme of, you know, what is it, 31 or 32 games we played. Those four games, like, we didn't sleep. We weren't happy at the rink. Like, I mean, it was – that game happened, and it was like, okay, that is never going to happen again. You know, we just kind of made it a point from day one that, you know, we weren't going to lose. And obviously, you know, the record kind of speaks for itself. And, you know, you look back at that, I still – that's not even like it doesn't even seem like it's possible to even think at 18.
And then you guys, absolutely. And then you guys basically
pretty cool to be a part of
four. And then this is the craziest part to me. So we talk about you guys splitting and I just still like the thought process behind this is wild, but you didn't play in the semifinal game. And then you did play in the national championship game.
I didn't. It was how the rotation worked. I sat on the bench for the semifinal game against Adrian. We were in Utica. I had, you know, 7-8 people from my family there. And my senior year, his junior year, everybody didn't really know what the coach was going to do. And he kept going with, you know, what we did all year. And, Ostep Chuck had the start, and I mean, I was sitting there and we went into overtime and I'm sitting on the bench thinking that whole game, there's no way that we just had this year and I'm going to finish my season sitting on this. I mean, I think they hit like two posts or something, and I mean, I was sitting there because there's obviously nothing I can do. I'm sitting on the bench thinking there's no way this is how it's going to end. And next thing you know, we scored, so I was pretty thankful that happened.
Crazy. That's nuts. Yeah, it's seriously, I can imagine. I mean, I forgot you guys went into overtime that year.
Yeah, we did. It was overtime. I think it was like 4 minutes in overtime. So imagine sitting there on the edge of your seat thinking about a what if on one.
Absolutely. End your career essentially. Because it's crazy. We're talking to our coach, James Rice, on Monday, and just saying how like he the one thing he remembers is like the last game of every kid's career. And it's easy to remember, you know, everyone's or for each of us to remember our last game, and you won your last game, but like how in a blink of an eye could have just been like a totally different story for you, and just be like, oh, we made all the way to the semifinals and lost in overtime, but it ended up going to the finals. And talk about, you know, the final game and getting the start and all the emotions and you know, just that whole experience.
It was huge. I mean, obviously, you know, and a lot of the guys in the room knew how much it meant to me, you know, and the coach knew how much it meant to me as well. So, you know, right after that game in the locker room, he said the lineup, you know, he said that I was going to be going, you know, and we, you know, a lot of the guys came up, you know, gave me some hugs, and, you know, we were ready to go because they knew that meant a lot to me. They knew it was probably going to be my last year. And I have never been more nervous in my life. You know, being on a stage like that, you know, we're playing in Utica's rink, you know, know, it's a big rink, and, you know, there's so many fans from Norwich made it there, man. It was insane. It was almost, it was like a home game. There was that many Norwich fans on, you know, where I'm standing in the first period on the left side, you know, it felt like we had that whole barn was full. It felt like on the left side was all Norwich. You look to the right and it was like a quarter of, you know, Trinity fans. And I mean, it was just excitement. It was so loud. And I mean, thinking back to all those emotions, it was like, I don't even remember warm-ups. I don't even remember the starting lineup. I don't remember the anthem, you know, because it was like, this is really happening, you know? Like, I never would have thought I would ever be a part of something like this, you know, 5 years ago or something like that. So, and then, man, as soon as that puck dropped and that you make your first save, I mean, It was like all those nerves just disappeared. You know, the rink goes quiet, and you're.
That's unbelievable, you're man. I would do like I. So. We've talked about it before. I would literally give up any moment in my hockey career to win a national championship.
Yeah, I mean, when it was counting down, there was a whistle with like 1 second left on the clock, and they're like actually trying to drop this puck right now. And we were up by like we scored an empty net.
Yeah, right.
And like, are you kidding me? Like. Well, I'm about to have the best celebration of my life. Like, I remember I was sitting there, and it took forever for them to drop that puck. Like, I was dropped down to a knee. I was like, this is happening. There's no way. It's physically impossible. They're not going to score two goals on me. So, like,
it's cool, though, because it gives you a second to take it in, and you get to actually think about it. Even after all the chaos, like, you score the empty netter, like, you know you guys won.
Yeah.
But then for that face-off, as much as you want to celebrate, you're like, the game's still going on, and we're about to win the national championship. That's such a cool, like,
man, that is so true. You're saying this right now, and I'm getting, like, the chills that I felt that exact moment. Like, I remember looking over at the bench, like, seeing 20-some guys, like, just, like, little kids, like, just ready to break out for recess, you know? Like, they're hanging over the boards, like, just drop that puck so we can throw our gloves as high as we can in the air, right? And, I mean, he did, and I remember just, you know, I was holding on my stick. I threw my stick so high in the air. Like, I mean, instant emotions, man. It was.
That's incredible. That's awesome.
I mean, you guys were, I mean, witness the first hand. You guys were great that year, and you just, like, had something about you. It was almost like you guys were on a mission from day one, and, you know, deservedly so. You guys, you know, got the job done. So, obviously, it must have been, I mean, has to be maybe your best hockey memory. I know Muzz would say maybe like youth hockey is one of his days that he enjoys the best, but he didn't win a national championship. So was that your favorite hockey memory?
Yeah, I gotta say that takes the cake for me. I've done some pretty amazing things. I've been a part of some pretty cool things. You know, maybe one of my PTO, you know, like maybe Black Ace in last year in the American Hockey League was pretty cool. Maybe the call up I had this year was pretty cool, but I mean, there was no time where I was wearing the equipment that I felt any better than I did when
yeah, we were absolutely. I don't blame
throwing our gloves as high as we could. But yeah, it was pretty special, and obviously, just talking about it right now, you know, you're getting chills, so you know how much that means.
All right, so let's do. Sure. That's crazy. All right, but so let's move on. So you got to, we'll do touch on the pro career a little bit, and then so we're already at 55 minutes. This has been great, but so maybe give us the lowdown. So you got to Norfolk. I know the story, obviously, of you know getting there on like a tryout basis, and then obviously Patty was there. Patterson was there, and he was under contract with Milwaukee, so like he wasn't going anywhere. And then, you know, how that played out for you from your perspective, just give that, and then, you know, how it's turned into, you know, you being able to get called up by Tucson and, you know, get a taste for the AHL, which is unreal.
Yeah, so, I mean, when I actually got invited to that camp, I was talking to the coach, and he's like, yeah, we'd like you to come, and sent it to me. And then it was like the next week I see that the Norfolk Admirals post on Instagram signed Jamie Murray. And I was like, what? Like, they just invited me to camp. And so I remember, actually, I don't know if you messaged me or I messaged you, but I was like, hey, you know, I know we played against each other. You know, we knew each other for
yeah,
those years,
dude.
So
you cool. messaged me, and I was like, this is such a weird, like, it was the first time, like, bridging the gap between, like, Norfolk and, I mean, Norwich and Babson. But, I mean, I knew Ty P and obviously Dino, so it wasn't that weird.
Exactly.
But, no, it was great to hear from you, and we were like, all right, let's go battle it out in camp. Like, that was pretty cool for us.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, I'm sitting there. I'm in my house in Montana. I get online. I'm looking at, you know, what you did in your year previously, and I'm like, man, I'm going there. He's just coming off AHL deal. You know, this goalie's on an AHL deal. You know, what am I? I'm coming out of college. Like, am I just a fill-in? I didn't know. So, I mean, I had some mixed emotions going in. Definitely didn't think I was even going to be considered until, you know, camp started. And I was just trying my best to, you know, to play my heart out and stop every puck I could. And it was, you know, they're making cuts. And I'm sitting there looking and I'm saying, okay, it's, you know, when's going to be my day? You know, I was, unfortunately, I hate to admit
that. It's natural, though.
Mindset,
like,
but I was.
It's a, pro hockey's a numbers game,
was,
dude. It's not,
I was waiting,
you know,
for that.
Which sucks.
Yeah. You know, I said, you know, I signed this guy. You know, they got this guy. He said, hey, I'm not a dummy. I can see what's going on here. And it's literally we're going to Colorado the next day. They pull us all in. I mean, you were there, so you know, but they're like, oh, this is the schedule. This is what we're doing, yada, yada, yada. And I was like, okay. Like, so we're keeping three goalies? I mean, and even the players were like, hey, why do we have to get rid of this kid? And then, you know, of course, sure enough, you know, coach, you know, come down to the office. So, you know, you obviously, your heart sinks. You feel that embarrassment because now you're going to have to go talk to everybody after and leave and say goodbyes, and they're going to say good luck, and, you know, they have to say that, and yeah, whatever. And you got all those emotions. You just want to crawl under a rock. And I get in there, and, you know, both head coach, assistant coach, and then, you know, GM's in there, and he said, hey, you know, you had a great camp. You definitely didn't play yourself out. You did way better than we thought you would when you came in. They said, but be honest, we brought you in here, you know, was it a favor? Was it just to fill in? Whatever it was, but we didn't really think you were going to be able to compete at the level we thought. And they kind of said, so what are you going to do now? And I said, well, I'm going to call my agent and I'm going to try to find a team to go play for. And literally, I went in, grabbed my exit physical, and I'm walking out to my car. I mean, this all happened in like 10 minutes. I'm literally have my keys in my hand.
Dude, I was literally there, though. Like, that's the craziest part.
Yeah, you were in the parking garage with me, and I was like, why are they calling me? And then you like went with somebody else.
Yeah, I was like obviously it sucks. Like, you know. We got pretty close in whatever it was, a couple of weeks, and I was like, this sucked. You know, yeah.
Wicks, we were roommates. They had us in the same room, and, like, so I see that Sid's calling me on my phone, and he looked at me, he goes, yeah, you gotta answer it. Like, so I was like, okay. And he goes, hey, Ty, come back in here. And hangs up the phone. So I was like, all right, well, I don't know. They just asked me to come back in. So went to lunch or something. I went to dinner. So I go back in there. And Robbie, head coach, is sitting there, and I'm sitting there. I'm like, what is going on? Like, I was just about to get in my truck and start crying, so what do you guys want now? You know, like, leave me alone. And then he goes, you know, if your agent finds you somewhere else to play, like, are you going to play with me? I said, well, yeah. Like, what do you mean? Like, I didn't want to go down and play in the SP. You know, I wanted to play at the highest level, and I – myself, I was like, hey, I can play at this level by judging what camp was like. And he said, all right, well, would you sign here? And he said it like, would I? And I was like, well, yeah, that's why I came to camp. Like, what kind of question is that? Yeah, I would. And he goes, so why don't you?
What?
Yeah. And I was like, such a Robbie line.
I was so confused. Yeah, and I mean, you got to know Robbie to, you know, kind of know his sense of humor or whatever, but, and he was dead serious. He just, so why don't you? And I was literally, I didn't say anything. I was looking at him, and then I looked at the GM, I looked at the assistant coach, I'm like, are you guys fucking with me right now? Like, what are you guys doing? Like, and, you know, sure enough, they said, all right, this is what you're going to sign for, and we're going to Colorado tomorrow. Be here at the rink at 8. And I was like,
crazy.
What? I get out to my truck, and, like, I sat in my truck for, like, 10 minutes and just thought about it. And then I call my dad, and I used to have no idea.
Like, yeah, just got cut and then made the team in a matter of 5 minutes.
And yeah, like, I mean, talk about a roller coaster of emotion. But yeah, obviously I experienced that with him and told him what just happened. And he was like, so confused too. And he's like, so are you going to Colorado? And I was like, yeah, I think I am. You know, because my whole family was going to meet me on that road trip since it's out kind of where we live, right? And so, of course, my family's ecstatic. And, you know, this is, yeah, it was crazy.
Quite the
experience there.
Moses told me a couple of funny things about different personalities in Norfolk, but I had never heard that story, obviously. That's so, why don't you just sign here? Okay.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it was like you literally just told me no. Like 5 minutes ago, what are you trying to say?
Yeah.
So
and then,
I think,
and then Ashton Kutcher jumps out of the closet. You've been plunked.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I was like, okay.
So we're at like 61. Like, so I think we want to wrap it up in a couple minutes here, but give us like the 2 minute rundown, just to like kind of tie it all back together. What it was like to play in front of your family in Idaho, after you know all that they'd been through, and then we'll wrap it up.
Crazy, man. I didn't expect to even play on that road trip. They didn't say anything to me. And we get to Idaho. You know, my whole family's there. They're seeing me play professional ice hockey. You know, seeing from, you know, my dreams when I was a little kid, right? And that was a pretty special feeling. You play that game. And, you know, I was just talking to a couple guys that are still on the team now that were there. And they were even like, hey, are we really putting this kid in net? You know, like, I was talking to TJ Malantz, and he just told me this, like, 2 days ago. And he was like, this kid's actually going to play this game. And, you know, I don't even know. It was, like, 40-some shots. I don't even remember what it was. But we won. I even got an assist in that game. My whole family's there. I mean, it was one of the – it was that's up there for one of the coolest experiences of my life. Because I didn't know how long it was going to last, right, you know. And neither of the coaches, they didn't know if I was going to be able to do it, if it was.
This is funny. So, like, 100% what you were saying, like,
next thing you know it,
when we were watching you in warm-ups in morning skate, and guys, you're kind of having the same reaction, like, oh, is this kid, like, good? I was like, dude, I played against him. He's a hell of a goalie, like, I promise. And we're watching you take, like, the shots in pregame skate, and you kind of got beat on, like, we were like, I was like, ooh, shit.
Oh,
like,
man,
it's
so
not
nervous.
Looking great right now. And then, like, dude, you went out and you were lights out. It was awesome. And then the rest is history.
It was fun. And then, yeah, I mean, it's crazy to think, like, that's, like, the emotion you can have in a game like that.
Oh, yeah.
Compared
like
to
it's
now
nothing.
When you take the ice, you know, you got over what? I have over, like, 70-some starts. And it's like, now you go over there
right.
And it's just like, okay, what's the next
right
step?
Yeah,
you know, can I go even
absolutely
farther? You know, it's pretty
well
cool.
Hopefully you do get another chance to get up there and make a statement in the AHL or whatever, you know, even if you don't, who knows. But it's been great talking to you, and we're definitely going to be following you, and I hope people that listen like your story. I'm sure they will, and I'm sure they're going to be following you too, so that's pretty cool.
Perfect. Sounds good. Thanks.
Yeah,
thanks
for coming
for
on kind of last second, because you know, we wanted to get you on eventually, but this ended up being perfect.
Yeah. Cool. I appreciate that. If you had told me a couple years ago that
for sure
that me and Jamie would be interviewing in Norwich, I probably would have told you you're crazy. But, you know, right?
For sure. I'm sure my fellow
yeah.
guys. Yeah, absolutely. But, hey, again, as Musa said, appreciate you, you know, you taking the time and joining us. And good luck the rest of the way.
Yeah.
We'll be following you for sure.
You got it. All right, see you, Tom.
Have a good one.
Thanks, fellas. I appreciate it.
That interview was brought to you by State and Liberty. State and Liberty found a solution to a problem that athletes everywhere were having: finding dress clothes that fit properly. Well, no more. I've always had issues finding dress clothes that fit me the way I want them to. Well, let me tell you, all my clothes from State and Liberty fit me perfectly. By providing more room in the upper body with an extremely tailored waist, their dress shirts cater to those with a V-shaped body type. Darts in the back of the dress shirt pull on the excess fabric, creating a fit that rewards those men that take care of their bodies. I better start working out more. These shirts are also wrinkle-free, machine-washable, and dry in about 20 minutes. The days of weekly trips to the dry cleaners are over. Must started his new job recently, and the first place he went for dress clothes, you guessed it, State and Liberty. So stop wearing dress clothes that don't fit. Head over to stateandliberty.com and use the promo code POSTGAMESHAKE to get 10% off your first and second order. That's stateandliberty.com, promo code POSTGAMESHAKE. Get your wardrobe where it needs to be.
That was our interview with a good friend of mine, former rival of both of ours at Norwich, and now a professional hockey player and obviously national champion. So we had a really good time kind of shooting it with him and learning a little bit more about his story, even stuff that I didn't know. I kind of thought I knew it all, but he's got a really, really crazy path to college hockey and to pro, and really happy to see the kid doing well. So hope you guys enjoyed it as much as we did, because we had a lot of fun with that.
Yeah, it was an awesome story. I know I love talking about kind of people's childhood and their youth hockey days. And being from Montana, he obviously had a lot of time on his hands. Like he was saying, not a lot of times he would go visit friends and stuff, and having, you know, a rink in his backyard and a barn sounds like a pretty cool hockey memory. But crazy, like I said, that sitting back here, two Babson kids interviewing a Norwich kid, just, you know, nuts, but a really good conversation, like you said.
Yeah, so it's like a parallel universe or something, man. It is bizarre. You think about how much we hated those guys, like me, I mean, me and Ty would battle. Every time we played each other, I felt like it was a battle. And not a kid that I ever envisioned myself being goalie partners with or friends or any of that, but he's a great kid, so it's funny how things work out.
Yeah, and obviously thanks to him for joining us. Hopefully you can get some Norwich kids to listen and get a couple more followers. Anyway, but
always about marketing.
Always about it. So to wrap up here, we have just like a couple of topics to kind of touch on, both happening today. The first one is a little trade in the NHL with the Wild trading Charlie Coyle to the Bruins for Ryan Donato in a fifth round pick. What do you think of the trade for the Bruins?
I love it. I like Ryan a lot. I think he's a good kid and a good hockey player. I think that he has a really relatively high ceiling in the NHL, but I think the Bruins are kind of in win now mode, which is great. I think that if you're obviously a fan of the, you know, any team, you want him to be in win now mode. And Charlie Coyle's an awesome third line guy. Like, he's a great player in general. And he's going to be probably the piece the Bruins need on that third line. So I'm all for it. And then I think there was some worry that they might end up giving up a first round pick or something. And all they gave up was a fifth. So unfortunate to see Ryan go, but traded him for another Boston boy and Charlie Coyle. So hopefully it works out for him.
Yeah, crazy. I think I'm kind of reading the article now. He can play center or wing. He's signed for next season as well for a relatively low cap hit. A really versatile player, a big, you know, I won't say bruising forward, but a big power forward who can kind of play in a lot of different areas. I think for the Bruins, it's a really good move. If you're just comparing Coyle to Donato, I mean, Coyle is older and it's been in the NHL a little longer. So for the playoff run this year, it makes sense plugging in Coyle. Maybe in the long run, Donato will have a higher upside and maybe accrue more points and have a better career. You have no idea, but I like the move for this year and kind of moving forward for the Bruins, trying to, you know, win a cup and win now. I think it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, he's like the ultimate Bruin. Great play, like physical, strong kid, willing to grind and do all the tough stuff really to make it happen. So I'm excited. I'm excited for him. Obviously, it's great for him to be able to come home and play in his hometown, which is funny because it feels like there's been so many guys like that. Obviously, a guy like Jimmy Hayes didn't really work out for. A guy like Ryan Donato, it worked out pretty well for. Unfortunately, he's gone. And then like Achari's a Providence kid, and McAvoy has been great, and Grizzlick, and it's cool. It's really cool to see it kind of be like more of a local based team anyway. Because I remember, I don't know if you remember, at one time the Bruins played the Canadians. This was like 5-10 years ago, and the Bruins were like 95% Canadians, and the Canadians were 95% Americans, and it's just such a weird concept, but.
Yeah, stuff like that can happen, obviously, you know, just kind of the way it goes. But it is cool for the Bees to kind of have a couple more hometown boys, you know, playing for them.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And then the other topic we wanted to touch on quickly before we pass it off today is Duke is hosting UNC, number one team versus number eight team in college basketball. And this is according to an article that was written this morning on ESPN, saying that the cheapest ticket you could get to watch the game at Cameron Indoor is $2,500.
Wait, what?
Yes, which is just shy of the cheapest ticket you could have paid to get a Super Bowl seat, and that was $2,600. So these tickets are approaching Super Bowl prices. That's just crazy.
Dude, I don't understand that. I mean, I'm not a huge college basketball guy, so I'm a little biased in that regard, but I don't understand what – it's the number one team versus the number eight team. It's not like it's number two.
They're saying it's the Zion factor.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much hype about that kid. Obviously, I'm sure a lot of it's deserved. He's a big boy. He's a big boy. He can do some pretty athletic stuff. So I would love to see him play in person. You better believe I'm not paying $2,500 to see him play in person in college. But I don't know. How do you feel about it? What do you think?
I mean, I'm not paying $2,500 to watch many things. I don't even know if I would pay $2,500 to go to the Super Bowl. Maybe like not now in my life, but I mean, maybe later on in life. But $2,500, that's a steep ticket. I'm reading some more of this article. It says some tickets were available for last year's championship game between Villanova and Michigan for $67.
That's crazy.
It's crazy. They're saying it's the Zion factor. We're not huge basketball guys. I know it's not a really huge basketball podcast. And so $2,500 is just a crazy price to be thrown out there. But I mean, good for this kid that he's creating this much buzz in the basketball world to stir up those kind of prices. I mean, I hope I'm going to throw the game on, I think, now and just see if it's worth it. I kind of hilariously hope it's like a blowout and like these people pay crazy money and it just doesn't even get to see a good game. But that's the cynic in me.
Yeah, it's funny. It reminds me of Bitcoin in a way. Like the hype just continues to build off of the hype.
Yeah.
And then it just spirals out of control. And then now you're like, oh, I'm going to tune in. And honestly, I don't know when the last time I watched a college basketball outside of March. And I might tune in.
Well, it's February
20th. See what it's all about.
So February 20th, so this is close enough. Yeah. Games at Cameron Indoor are always, you know, more fun than not. And UNC Duke is a pretty good rivalry. So I think it's not crazy to say you tuned in. And lastly, this it says one ticket sold for $10,652. Who would pay $10,000 to go to
the college? Man, you're there for like two and a half hours. I don't understand it. Is it really worth it? I mean, if you have that much money, good for you. I guess if you have money to blow. But, you know, you go to the Super Bowl, you can make a week out of it. You go to this game, you're probably just going to go to the game, and that's it.
You can go to – you can probably go to Hawaii for, like, a family of a couple for 10 grand.
Yeah, I would love to go to Hawaii right
now. Not that I'm looking, but, I mean, Jesus, I'd rather go to Hawaii or, like, Cancun than for 10 grand than go to watch a basketball game. But, hey.
Yeah, Cancun, you can go to Cancun for, like, $1,200 for a week, all-inclusive.
Probably. I could say at a six-star resort for 10 grand. Jesus.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, tweet your zone, I guess, right? So we can't judge. But that's all I had for topics to kind of wrap it up here. Did you have anything else you want to touch on before we let go?
Not that I can think of. No, I think that's good for me.
All right, cool.
Yeah.
That does it. I hope everyone enjoyed the interview. We enjoyed kind of picking Ty's brain and hearing about his career and his path and playing the SJ and then eventually winning a national championship for Norwich, and then eventually, you know, where he is now playing on the coast. So really cool story, and I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as we did.
Yeah, cool. That's it for us. We are out of here.
iTunes, subscribe, give us a rating. Let us know what you think. You know, we're going to keep bringing on hopefully interesting, cool interviews and hoping to kind of, you know, build the listener base as much as we can. So,
yep.
To everyone who listened, thank you so much. And to everyone who is going to listen in the future, also thank you. And, you know, we're having fun with this, so hopefully you guys enjoy listening as well.
Hell yeah. And like I said previously, give us an honest review about how much you love us. It would mean the world.
Yeah, only about how much you love us.
Exactly. All right, cool. Let's get out of here.
All right. Sounds good. Peace.
Peace.